Penguin Random House Audio presents America First, Roosevelt vs. Lindbergh in the Shadow of War by H.W. Brands. Read for you by Mark Bramhall. Prologue. The crowd started gathering in the late afternoon. Some came to cheer, others to protest. Most knew they wouldn't get inside the Manhattan Center, the old opera house once so successful, the rival Metropolitan Opera paid to shut it down. Tickets were reserved for the most important people in the city, those of them, at any rate, inclined to be associated with the controversial group sponsoring the evening's event. The America First Committee, they called themselves, established just 7 months earlier in September 1940, they claimed 500,000 members, with thousands more swelling the ranks of the committee's hundreds of local chapters each week. Headquarters were in Chicago, far from the coast and even farther from the wars being waged in Europe and Asia. Midwesterners, including descendants of German immigrants, were well represented among the members. So were socialists, who preached international brotherhood, anti-communists who said Russia was the greater threat than Germany, xenophobes and nationalists who distrusted foreigners and disdained to include them in calculations of American interest, Republicans reflexively opposed to anything Franklin Roosevelt supported, open and closeted admirers of Hitler and Mussolini, Irish Americans unwilling to lift a finger to help the British, their homeland's historic oppressor, industrialists who feared the nationalization of their businesses should America go to war again, as their businesses had been nationalized in the World War, and young men who didn't want to become the kind of cannon fodder their fathers had been in that first war. And now their ranks included Charles Lindbergh, the celebrity hero of the age in America. The famous aviator, conqueror of the Atlantic in 1927, feted around the planet since, had long spoken against American involvement in the affairs of Europe and Asia. But until a week ago, he had done so on his own, as befitted the one his admirers called the Lone Eagle. His decision to close ranks with the other anti-war activists reflected an apparent increase in America's momentum toward war. Roosevelt had been elected to a third term, thereby giving his critics a new argument that war would be Roosevelt's excuse to make himself dictator, or at least president for life. He had persuaded Congress to fund American military aid to countries fighting the Axis powers, Germany, Italy, and Japan. His latest scheme was to furnish naval convoys for goods crossing the Atlantic. Congress hadn't approved the convoys, and the America First Committee was determined to keep the lawmakers from doing so. Wasn't it obvious what Roosevelt intended? He was provoking German submarines to fire on American ships and kill American seamen. When they did, he would demand and doubtless receive a declaration of war. This was what Lindbergh was going to say this evening. America was on the brink of war. Only a concerted effort by peace-loving and right-minded Americans could pull the country back. Lindbergh and the others were tarred as isolationists by their interventionist opponents. He and the others embraced the label if it meant they aimed to isolate America from the madness consuming Europe and Asia. Some in the group were pacifists, but most were not. Lindbergh was not. He contended that a security perimeter close to American shores, proclaimed at once and defended as necessary, was most likely to bring real and lasting security. He rose to speak. The audience inside the Manhattan Center fell silent and leaned forward to listen. As they did, the shouts from the throng outside became audible. The police had closed 34th Street to vehicles and pushed the crowd back from the doors of the building, but they hadn't been able to keep the protesters and counter-protesters from exchanging epithets and blows. To those inside, the violence in the street sounded a warning against the much greater violence they aimed to avert. Radio carried Lindbergh's address, and millions tuned in. Franklin Roosevelt did not. The president knew what the aviator was going to say. It was what the isolationists had been saying for 2 decades, since, indeed, they torpedoed the Treaty of Versailles in the Senate at the end of the World War. Their opposition to foreign commitments had intensified since then, and it kept the United States out of the League of Nations, signaling to the enemies of freedom that they could have their way with the countries they trampled and brutalized. Politics had prompted Roosevelt to hold his tongue during his first 8 years in office. He knew that by riling the isolationists, he would imperil the New Deal and spoil his chances of alleviating the domestic distress of the country. But the outbreak of war abroad had increased demand for the products of American farms and factories and revived the economy, and his election to a third term gave him a mandate for stronger action internationally. The Lend-Lease program Congress had recently passed was heartening the British, the Chinese, and others fighting the Axis. American convoys would ensure that the American-made weapons and provisions reached their intended destinations. Roosevelt rejected much of what Lindbergh and the isolationists were saying. He had to admire their cleverness in claiming the label America First, which implied that their opponents had dubious priorities. Roosevelt considered himself as much an America Firster as Lindbergh and the others. He simply had a clearer view of where America's interests lay. Their policy was really America alone, at a time when the United States needed all the help it could get in dealing with the existential challenge of militant fascism. Those in the Lindbergh crowd who weren't outright apologists for Hitler underestimated the degree to which the Nazi regime required war to maintain its legitimacy. Hitler wouldn't stop until he came after the United States, and if he controlled all of Europe by that time, America would be truly and terrifyingly alone. Aid to Britain wasn't for the sake of Britain. It was for America's sake, to keep Britain's fleet afloat and Britain itself viable as a launchpad for fighting Hitler on the eastern side of the Atlantic rather than the western. Yet Roosevelt silently acknowledged an essential part of the isolationists' argument, that American aid to countries fighting the Axis made America's direct intervention more likely. In public, Roosevelt said the opposite, that America sent guns to the wars in Europe and Asia so it wouldn't have to send soldiers. He hoped this might be so, but he didn't believe it. Hitler and the warlords of Japan wouldn't stop till they met an immovable object, and American military power was the only such object left to oppose them. By the time Lindbergh addressed the America First meeting, Roosevelt had concluded that sooner or later, America would have to take on Germany and Japan, and sooner would be better than later. Yet the isolationists might still frustrate his design. They were more dangerous than ever now that Lindbergh was their charismatic spokesman, which was all the more reason for Roosevelt to keep his conclusions to himself. Part 1. The Allure of Neutrality. Chapter 1. A more terrible thing couldn't have happened to a more admirable man. Such was the reaction of Americans as they read that the infant son of Charles Lindbergh had been kidnapped. Lindbergh had become America's hero 5 years earlier when he accomplished the historic feat of leaping the Atlantic in a single bound of flight. The 25-year-old aviator paired the courage of the explorer with the technical know-how of the inventor. He was Lewis and Clark and Edison rolled into one. That he was handsome, tall and rangy, with the blonde hair and blue eyes of his Swedish forebears, made Lucky Lindy irresistible to the newsreel cameras that were just beginning to bring important events to mass audiences almost as they happened. His natural shyness made him the more appealing. Amid the din of the roaring 20s, his diffidence was endearing. He seemed the boy next door, if the boy next door were also inventive, brave, and famous. His wedding to Anne Morrow, the charming and talented daughter of a Wall Street banker turned...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?